Hello and welcome to Euractiv's Agri-Food Podcast. I'm Gerardo Fortuna.
I'm Julia Ram.
And I'm Natasha Fett.
And here's your weekly update on all things agriculture and food in the EU from Euractiv's Agri-Food team.
So this week, of course, all eyes have been on Ukraine and the ongoing war that is occurring there. And it's no different in the agri-food sector that stands to be really impacted by this war.
Yeah, indeed. I was quick talk with our senior editor Georgi Gotev, and we were discussing, it's actually my first war as a reporter. I know that I'm not there in Kyiv, but actually even from the point of view of reporting from Brussels, it's having a lot of impact on the agriculture sector, but also on when it comes to health, for instance. And as our listeners know, we're also dealing with the health policies. And of course, the EU's agriculture sector stands to be hit quite hard in the coming weeks, squeezed between the kickback of sanctions to Belarus and Russia and the reduced trade from Ukraine. Let's recall the fact that Ukraine alone accounts for 19% of EU wheat imports and 13% of oilseed imports. So this could have a huge impact, for instance, on the livestock sector. It's very difficult to, it's going to be very difficult for the EU farmers to cope with that. And also, I mean, there's, as I said, also the sanctions. It was approved on Wednesday, a new package of sanctions against Belarus that basically banned every type of potash, which is one of the three main chemical nutrients used in commercial fertilizers. The other are, of course, phosphate and nitrogen. And potash was already targeted by the sanctions against Belarus in June, but now it's basically, the EU basically extended to all kind of imports of this product, the ban. And this, of course, has a big impact in an already going critical situation when it comes to the prices of inputs. So these, of course, led to some kind of speculation. First speculation, then, because, I mean, on Monday there was the Comagri meeting, the Agriculture Committee at the European Parliament, where MEPs started thinking of rethinking of the goals of the Green Deal.
I mean, the main topic of conversation was that this Ukraine war has put food security back into the spotlight. And then there were a couple of MEPs that also then put into question maybe the EU's green goals. And that's something we've also been hearing from farmers associations this week, you know, how wise it is to pursue these green goals. You know, they're saying that the lens and the focus should be shifted purely to food security. And that's really what, I mean, that was the emerging theme from the meeting this week in the Agri Committee of the European Parliament. It's for sure put it back on the menu.
Yeah, and a confirmation of that, and particularly of the fact that the Commission is mulling over, looking again at the objectives of both farm to fork and biodiversity strategy in a different light, which is the light of the food security. Again, this confirmation arrived after the extraordinary meeting of EU ministers on Wednesday. So the Agriculture Commissioner Janusz Wojciechowski basically said that we need to keep a close eye on the objectives of these policies in the context of food security, which is not something new. He already said that 2 years ago, in speaking before MP, French MPs, But of course, the context completely changed.
Yeah, you view the words a bit differently considering what's happening.
Indeed. I mean, it's there's signals of market disruptions when it comes to, for instance, commodities, but also input prices, as we said before. And of course, we don't know the outcome. I mean, we don't know when the situation will end. Just to make an example, even the humanitarian activities at European borders and in Ukraine could result in some kind of increased demand for foodstuffs. So at the same time, there's the gas prices at stake, and this could drive a further increase in world prices, and this further increase could lead to, could affect the entire agri-food sector. So it's something that will definitely be on the agenda again, the topic of food security. And it's actually, for some, it was also an excuse for particularly for the industry to bring back the topic. But again, at the same time, Wojciechowski himself reassured that they don't want to toss these strategies aside. They just want to consider other elements given the current situation. Let's see where we're gonna. Yeah,
something that I don't think civil society are going to be very happy about.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's safe to say after years of pushing back on this kind of narrative and also gaining some ground with this, because you know there was Commissioner Sinkevicius that at one point said, "Yeah, food security is not an issue anymore," and you know everyone was kind of rejoicing a bit of the civil society were rejoicing in terms of their narrative kind of coming through and. Now, I'll be. I don't think they're going to be particularly happy.
No, but I mean, again, this is also one of the arguments of not only of NGOs but also of Wojciechowski. So, I mean, if you have this issue with the increase increase input price, let's reduce input. So basically, let's use less fertilizer, which is one of the goals of the farm-to-fork strategy. So it's basically. Reducing the dependency on Belarus and Russia,
or anywhere that you get it from.
I mean, in this sense, it's a bit of a way to cope with the fact that you can reduce dependency on third countries. So again, there are several arguments. An anticipation again. It's just the entree of a renewed debate, but it's very interesting that the ministers proposed. They put forward a proposal to the Commission to basically focus for 2022 on protein crops instead of the sustainable arable land or non-productive lands to cope with the fact that we're going to have less products for animal husbandry, basically, from Ukraine. So since this could have an impact on animal feed, growing protein crops could help to cope with that, with this lack of imports from Ukraine. This is one of the newest things. So this slight change in, but it's again, even the Normandie, the French minister and chair of the Agri-Fish Council at the moment pointed out this is just for 2022. We're not changing the focus of the farm-to-fork strategies and the agri-food policies in the EU we're not going to switch this focus from sustainability to productivity.
But not only the EU has been affected by the Ukraine war. We also have neighboring countries who've been hit quite severely. For example, Albania, we've had news this week that in the face of sanctions imposed on Russia, bread could actually be off the menu. And with us, we have Alice Taylor, who is in Albania. So Alice, could you explain to us a bit what this is all about?
Yes, the Albanian bread shortage of 2022. Well, I shouldn't joke, but what you have to understand is bread is an integral part of the Albanian diet. I've often joked before that Albanians will eat bread with pasta, with pizza, with things that we wouldn't normally eat bread with. So the fact that it's potentially going off the menu or will become unaffordable for people is quite serious, because it's a core staple item in people's diets. But not just bread, other products that are made with wheat as well. So pertolets, a kind of donut, flatbreads, like tortilla type things. I mean, there's all sorts of various different products that are going to be impacted by this. And essentially what's happened is, because of the conflict in the Ukraine and various sanctions, Albania is going to be missing out on around 43% of its annual wheat consumption. That's the amount it brings from Russia. And there's an additional 3.3% that it brings from the Ukraine. Now, the rest, apart from a very small amount which is generated locally, comes from countries which in turn import the product from Russia and Ukraine. So they're also going to be impacted. In terms of domestic production, I mean, the government hasn't seriously invested in agriculture here at all. So the amount generated is very, very low, and it's quite localized. So farmers will generate it for the local area rather than enough to feed the nation. The other issue is we don't have any strategic reserves. So following the 2019 earthquake, which displaced thousands of people, then the COVID pandemic, which saw many families at risk of starvation and total poverty, the stores were depleted. Now, they haven't been filled up again, and wholesalers only have 45 days worth left. Now, they have said, no, don't worry, we're not going to run out of wheat. We will be able to import it from elsewhere. Now, the problem is that importing it from elsewhere means higher costs, at a time when costs are already significantly higher than before due to the fuel crisis and problems with transportation and supply chains. So Albania, I mean, this is a country where the minimum wage is 240 euros a month. The average person in Tirana earns about 550, and they are considered sort of middle class. So you have to understand that with a third of people living below, on or below the poverty line, an already existing increase in the cost of flour, which is used for loads of different items in the Albanian diet, and then the potential of even more increased prices, this is huge. This is going to have a significant effect. And this is what I mean, really, when I write it could be off the menu, because many parties, many people are just not going to be able to afford it.
So the last shipment of Russian wheat arrived this Wednesday. But does Albania have any other alternatives to turn to?
We had the last shipment of Russian wheat arrive in the port of Durres yesterday. Now, this was around 3,000 tons, if I'm not mistaken, which is equivalent to 1% of the annual consumption. So we had 45 days worth. Now we've probably got another week on top of that. So, I mean, the local associations involved in this have said they're sourcing other places to get it from, but prices are going to increase. While this might be a minor issue in the big grand scheme of things, for your average Albanian family earning 300 euros a month, struggling to feed their family and send their kids to school and things, you know, this is huge. It's going to have a big impact.
And we have a first this week, first time that we're doing something. I know that now I'm creating a bit of hype or expectations.
Well deserved.
Yeah. Well deserved. I mean, Julia is quite new to the podcast, but I'm the experienced one, and we never done this before. So what are we going to do, Natasha?
We have some live on the ground reporting for you. Very exciting from me, actually.
Yeah.
So
What are you reporting on?
Good question. Let's find out.
So I'm here at the Salon de l'Agriculture in Paris. And as you might be able to hear, there is a lot going on. I'm actually perched next to some sheep in the vain hope that they might give me some noises. They're not being very obliging at the moment, but you never know. Never know your luck. I'm hoping for a baa or maybe a moo somewhere if I can find some cows. So the first impressions are that there is a lot going on. So there's a cacophony of noises and smells. There's animals everywhere, but it's also very impressive. I mean, this exhibition is absolutely huge, and it brings the farm right to the capital of right to the heart of France's capital. And I'm not exaggerating when I say there are thousands of people here, all coming to learn about farming and the agri-food system, which is quite heartening to see. I've spoken to people that have come from all over France, not just Paris. And for some of them, it's a regular thing. For others, it's their first time here. They're just interested to see what's going on. But one thing they all have in common is this really strong interest in food culture, and in, you know, their heritage, which is honestly very refreshing. And the other thing that I've noted is that there are so many kids here. There are children everywhere. There are tons of little games and activities for them. I've had kids really engaging in this. I've had them speaking to scientists. I've had them talking about water purification and fertilizers and all these really interesting discussions they're having, as well as being able to get really up and close and personal with the animals, which, you know, for many of them, if they come from the city, maybe they've not had the chance to do this. Maybe they've not had the opportunity to really understand where their food comes from. And so that's also really refreshing. Come on, give me a baa. What about you? Baa. Come on. Ugh, what a disappointment. Never work with animals or kids, they say. But I suppose the flip side of having this this very interactive experience and bringing the farm to a capital city is that, of course, you have all these animals that are suddenly find themselves in the Parc des Expositions at Paris, not exactly their natural environment. You know, there's a lot of lights, there's a lot of noise, there's a lot of people. And I've seen a few animals getting quite stressed out, the worst of which is what I'm witnessing as we speak. There is a cow getting visibly distressed. It's basically all the cows are kind of tethered together in this central section, all tethered onto like a pole. And this cow is not happy at all. It's very clear. You know, he's bucking his head around, making a lot of noise. The vets are around him, looking a little bit concerned. They're talking about cordoning off the area so that people can't walk beside him. And I spoke to the vet about this, and I asked him, how stressful is this for the animals? Because this is clearly a strange experience for them. And he said, well, it depends on the animal. Normally they're trained for this. Clearly some get more stressed than others, but they take all the necessary precautions to try and lower the stress as much as possible. But it's definitely a flip side that I think is worth mentioning and worth considering when talking about this salon. Something that's also interesting is the number of really big companies here. So I was kind of surprised to see McDonald's here. I didn't expect to see McDonald's, I didn't expect to see Lidl, Danone. There are a lot of big industry players here, all of which are kind of talking about the merits of their different programs, carbon farming programs, regenerative agriculture, programs to kind of... Oh, there's a cow coming towards me. Oh my goodness. Okay. The hazards of the reporting on the job. Wow, these cows are big. Whoa. They're handled very expertly as well, so hats off to them. Anyway, what was I saying? Yeah, so big industry players, all talking about carbon farming, all talking about regeneration, all talking about closing the gap between supermarkets and producers. I actually spoke with one of the commons managers the commons manager of Lidl, who was telling me about their program to try and bring basically they have a program that that means that farmers are the ones that get to set the prices for their products. So they say to Lidl, I can live off this much, this is how much I need to survive, and they guarantee it for a number of years. It's interesting to see that industry players are more and more interested in sustainability. and also in closing this gap between producers and the end point where consumers buy them. It also does mean that it's... there's another cow coming. Oh, right. Very beautiful cow, this one. Black and white, very beautiful. It also does mean that it is actually surprisingly difficult to actually talk to farmers on stands. Like, the ones in the stands are not normally the farmers. The farmers are the ones you just kind of find mulling around here to have a look. It's an interesting observation.
So for this week's flavor of the week, we're taking a spoonful because we're talking about sugar. And I'm sure you know where sugar goes, cakes, sweets, basically all kinds of delicious stuff. But where does it come from? Most of raw sugar comes from sugar canes, which are basically giant grasses that grow in top tropical climates like Brazil. But some of it is also made from beets, which also survive in chillier climates. And in fact, the EU is a big producer, which makes up about 50% of global production. And you could already eat this raw sugar, but maybe your taste is a little more refined, if I can say so, in which case you might want to have it go through a refinery first, where unwanted tastes are removed. Because I heard, for example, the beet sugar can taste of beet quite strongly if it's not refined.
Interesting. And there's no doubt that sugar's delicious, sugar's fun. But of course, we also need to talk about health, because this week we have World Obesity Day and sugar is one of the main culprits here. So consumption of too much sugar has been linked with things like obesity, diabetes, cardiovascular disease or tooth problems. And the European Food Safety Authority actually published new findings on this just this week. So according to them, you should keep your intake of added sugar as low as possible. And the EU has plans to help reduce sugar intake. So as part of the flagship food policy, the Farm to Fork strategy, the Commission is planning to set up so-called nutrient profiles, basically rules that give maximum amounts of sugar and fat, things like that. So if a product exceeds them, it will not be allowed to be marketed as healthy. And the Commission wants to table plans for this by the end of the year.
And speaking of the, I'm supposed to say the boring stuff every week. Anyway,
what do you mean it's boring? It's not boring.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about the funny stuff. I'm talking about the ULO all the time.
It's not boring, it's nerdy.
Important.
Okay, it's important.
It's nerdy and important.
It's nerdy, but okay, yeah.
It's kind of up your street.
Yeah, you want to insult me as well? Or?
I just called you important and nerdy. And nerd. Yeah, but nerdy is not an insult.
It's true. It's not an insult.
Just get on and tell us about EU law, please.
Yeah. Indeed. Sugar was actually the last agricultural sector that the EU still had production quotas for. Mm. Yeah, and they were only scrapped in 2017. Now this may rightfully sound like an absolute technicality, and which it is, but it actually has important implications.
See, important.
Important. And also narrow implications. basically production quotas meant that every EU country could only produce a certain amount of sugar in order to make sugar, to make sure that sugar prices on the European market don't drop too low. But this, of course, led to some issue. For instance, for a lot of time, they rightfully complained, particularly at the WTO level, that this regime stimulated the overproduction of sugar in Europe. The notorious sugar mountains. Maybe our colleagues from the UK knows about this British anti-EU propaganda. And also, there was, to get rid of the surplus, the EU basically offered the refineries export rebate, which is another word that...
I told you you love this.
The UK, yeah.
Try and deny it, but look at you. You're grinning ear to ear talking about this.
You know that I like this kind of stuff. It's just that I don't want our listener to thinking that I'm the boring one.
Just embrace it, Gerardo. Embrace being
I'm not gonna do the EU part next week. At the same time, this also means that sugar prices are basically free now to drop as production increases, and EU sugar producers have also complained about these. There was also a new report from the European Association of Sugar Manufacturers pointing out that 8 beet sugar factories in the EU had to close because they struggled to adapt to a period of record low sugar prices after quotas was dropped. And the EU, on the other hand, is happy with how the sector has developed since the change, which was highlighted in a report from 1 month ago, actually, where the Commission concluded that the sugar sector has proven to be resilient to the new system. And that's all from us this week. This week, the AgriFood podcast is produced by Euractiv's AgriFood team, Gerardo Fortuna, Natasha Hood, and Julia Dam, with the technical support of Evi Chiori.
This podcast is also available on all major streaming platforms, including Amazon, Apple, Spotify, and Stitcher.
Be sure to subscribe to our newsletter so you don't miss the latest agriculture news from the EU. I'm Julia Dam. Thanks for listening, and see you next week.